Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 15, delivered on October 10, 2017. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Tonight, Review for Exam 1. Exam 1 is 5 questions, you answer 4. Don't answer 5 and say, give me points, give me the best score. Stop the first 4 that you have answered. Each question is worth 25 points. 5 points of each question is your spelling, punctuation, and grammar. And there's a rubric online, a grading rubric, that guides you on appropriateness of answers and all that. 2 sentences, no more. Don't try to do run-on sentences or do 3 sentences. I stop at the end of the second sentence. Just say what you have to say and then go on to the next question. Be clear and sharp in your answers. Don't start an answer with I think or I feel or I believe. Just say what you have to say. And this is based on lectures, so use your notes and the podcast. The book covers many of these subjects too, but not all of them. And your authority on this is the lectures. Don't go on the internet and try to find answers. That's a prescription for losing all the points, because the person writing those answers could be one of my cats. So don't do that, okay? I encourage you to work in groups to study, but don't let someone just bully the answers, the know-it-all, because usually the alpha in a group is the stupidest one in the group. Don't let someone guide your answers. I've seen that clusters of people giving the same wrong answer, and it's clear that that comes from groupthink, with one person being credible because of personality, voice, or something like that, but actually being someone who probably should be going to a community college instead of here. The questions that I'm going to give you, they might not be the same wording exactly on the test, but they are, most of the questions on the test will be from this grouping, but there will be some that I might leave out. You, when I'm finished giving what I think you should study, then it's your turn to ask me questions. And if you say, is this going to be on the test, and it's not going to be on the test, I'll say, don't study that. That's not going to be on the test. That helps you, that shapes you. You can even ask questions about my questions. I'm not going to pre-grade answers. Don't send me, I've answered all your questions. Tell me if these are right. No, I don't do pre-grade. But you can ask me generalized questions about the topic at hand, and I will guide you as much as I can. Now, I'm in my office tomorrow for a while before, from about 1:15, I guess I try to get there before then, but about 1:15. Then, of course, I have office hours Thursday morning and Thursday evening right before this class. So by all means, if you have questions, ask, share your concerns. But let me get started here for a while. And like I said, when I'm finished, I expect you to ask me questions. Otherwise, I'll just say, that's all I have for you today. I thank you, and that'll be it. And you could have gotten opportunities that you missed. Okay, first one, what is money? And what are the 3 types? What is money? Now, there are 4 types, but as I told you, one of them is the 21st century, and I'm preparing you for jobs in the 20th century. But what is money, and what are the 3 types? Why are interest rates and changes in them important in forecasting securities prices? Why are interest rates and changes in them important in forecasting securities prices? Now, there are two questions that are related because they're both about bond price dynamics. And I might ask just one of them or I might combine them in a single question. But the first one would be, what is the relationship between the term of a bond and its price? What is the relationship between the term of a bond and its price? Now, if you understand this, and I gave you this answer in a lecture, I actually said this, you can answer this question in a nine-word sentence. It's straightforward. There's no creativity. It's just a straightforward relationship between bond price and term. Excuse me. Now, there's a related question. What is the relationship between the price of a bond and the spread between coupon and yield? What is the relationship between the price of a bond and the spread between coupon and yield? Now, I'm going to tell you what will lose you all the points. If you answer the price goes up or the price goes down, either of those answers would get you a zero, minus 20 on the question. You'd still get your 5 points if you had a nice sentence. But that I'm trying to throw out a lifeline. Don't do that. Because I'm not telling you which way the spread happens. I'm not saying the yield goes above the coupon or the yield goes below the coupon. I'm just asking you what happens to the price of the bond if the spread increases either way. And I answered this one in class too. Directly, verbatim, the answer is in your notes, I hope. And it's definitely in the podcast, one of the podcasts about bonds. As a matter of fact, I brought it up twice. I've had 8 or 9 people say, I can't find your podcasts on ReggieNet. No, they're on my private website. It's in the syllabus, the URL. Okay. Who has the residual claim to the cash flows of a corporation? And what are the ways a corporation can satisfy this claim? Again, who has the residual claim to the cash flows of a corporation? And what are the ways the corporation can satisfy this claim? Important for you, and I'm giving you for some of these, I'm giving you a little guidance. Make sure you understand prior claim versus residual claim. It should be in your notes more than a few times. Make sure you understand prior claim versus residual claim on cash flows. Who has the residual claim to the cash flows of a corporation? And what are the ways a corporation can satisfy this claim? The next one. Explain two costs critical to financial analysis that are not in financial statements. Explain two costs that are critical to financial analysis that are not in financial statements. Sidebar note for this one. This has to do with the difference between finance and accounting. And I went on that the second lecture, and I hit it several times after that. Financial statements, financial analysis is done by finance people. Financial statements are done by accounting people. What is the market cap of a corporation? Why is the market cap of a corporation important in financial analysis? Again, why is the What is the market cap, and why is it important in financial analysis? I apologize. What is the market cap, and why is it important in financial analysis? What are the differences between common stock and preferred stock? Let me be a little more specific. What are two differences between common stock and preferred stock? Remember, they're both equity. They're not debt. They're both equity. But I gave you several differences between them. What are two differences between common stock and preferred stock? A corporation can finance major capital projects by issuing debt or by issuing equity. A corporation can finance major capital projects by issuing debt or by issuing equity. Give one advantage and one disadvantage of each way. A corporation can finance major capital projects by issuing debt, in other words, borrowing, or it can issue equity, in other words, selling common stock. What is one advantage and one disadvantage of each way? Distinguish between the primary and secondary markets for securities. Distinguish between the primary and secondary markets for securities. What financial ratio would clearly indicate that a corporation was in default on at least some of its debt obligations? What financial ratio would clearly indicate that a corporation was in default on at least some of its debt obligations? What financial ratio would clearly indicate that a corporation was in default on at least some of its debt obligations? Now, the next one. What is the relationship between risk and return? What is the relationship between risk and return? Side note for this one. I'm trying to lead you astray. The relationship isn't between risk and return. In fact, there's an adjective that would go in front of risk and an adjective that would go in front of return. Now, the first one, risk, I won't hold you to account if you don't put that one in. But the second one is absolutely critical. I'm saying the word return, but you have to come back with a specific type of return. There's a word that will go in front of return. This is a 9-word, one-sentence answer. If you get it right, if you understand it, you can nail it in 9 words. What does the beta of a stock measure? And what does a beta of one, of exactly one mean? Now, I'm going to give you a more technical definition of beta later. Let me read the question again. What does the beta of a stock measure? And what does a beta of exactly 1.0 mean? Although I will give you a more technical definition in the second half of this course, I've been showing you stock screens frequently, and you'll notice that I, if I'm not mistaken, every time I look, I comment on the beta, and I've asked you to interpret the beta. So you know what a beta is, maybe not on a technical level, but you definitely know what beta is measuring. Because I've shown it to you, and you've answered me. You weren't doing very well at first, but then as I showed you more stock screens, you were nailing it. You understand beta is a very important measure in finance. It is our measure of risk, but it's our measure of the only of the risk that matters to us. There is risk, and then there is the risk that matters to us. That's an important thing. Put that down. There is risk, but then there is a part of that risk that is the only risk that matters to us. Risk dominates finance. As a matter of fact, I'm giving a 341 exam on Wednesday. It's dominated by these same concepts at a deeper level that you're learning here. So if you nail this course, then you're definitely ready to be a finance major and take my next course, which is the step up. Or not. Probably not. Give one reason why debt would be preferable to issuing stock to finance capital projects, and one reason why it would not be preferable. Give one reason why issuing debt or bonds would be preferable to issuing stock to finance a capital project. And give one reason why it would not be preferable. You notice that this one is related to a previous question about advantages and disadvantages of stock and bonds. They're approaching the question in a different way slightly, but they're related. So that should key you, and here's something for your side notes. Understand the advantages and disadvantages of bonds and the advantages and disadvantages of issuing stock. This is pervasive in the lectures, in the podcast, and in your notes. You'll see me talk about this over and over again. What does flight to quality mean? What does flight to quality mean? What are the components of the risk-free rate, and what are the components of the risk premium? What are the components of the risk-free rate, and what are the components of the risk premium? Now, two different things about this one. Again, what are the components of the risk-free rate, and what are the components of the risk premium? Two things. You answer in, don't give me an equation. Never give me an equation for an answer on one of my in-class exams. Write a sentence. Don't do a list. You will lose half the points if you do a list on me. You answer me in a complete sentence. The components of the risk-free rate are this, and this, comma, and the components of the risk premium are this, comma, and this. You answer me in a sentence. Don't do a bullet list or a numbered list because you'll lose a lot of points. That's not what I ask you for. Follow my directions. The other thing that's more substantive is this. In some questions, I will just say, what are? In other questions, I'll say, explain. If I say, what are, you just tell me the what are, okay? Don't give me the explanation, because I didn't ask you for the explanation. In other questions where I say explain, that means you go on to give me some more information. This is for your benefit when you get out there in the world of the corporation. Sometimes people will just say, can you give me these? Don't give them an essay on what each one is, because you'll probably irritate them, because they probably know the explanations. They just don't know the terms, okay? So if I say, what are, that's a sentence that just gives me the components. If I say, explain or describe, then you're going further, okay? Know that about these. It's difficult to satisfy me at first, but you'll see why as the course goes along. What is the relationship between asset value and interest rates? What is the relationship between asset value and interest rates? This is related to a question that was given before. This is critical. What determines, how do we figure out the value, like of a project? How did I show you how I would value you as a person in finance? How do we figure out value? And what does that have to do with interest rates? And I'm trying to help you out with this one. It's actually a very short answer, but it's a compellingly deep answer of how we set value, how we find value. How do I know what something's going to be worth now if all of it's the money from it comes in the future? How do we do that? And how are interest rates involved? What do they cause to happen in our valuation? Show me you know this one, and you've got my attention. That's enough from me. You answer, you ask questions. You could ask them from this list, something. I'm not going to tell you an answer, but I can give you a little more guidance, maybe. Or you could look at your notes. Remember, I didn't give you everything that could be on the test. There could be something that I haven't asked you. So, ask me. Yeah.
Would you
If I remember, don't hold me to this, I believe I've given you four of the five. Not verbatim. Again, you won't see exactly these words possibly, but they will be the same questions overall. And the dominant themes, of course, as you can see, knowing what bonds versus stock, knowing the difference between them, understanding the role of interest rates, the role of risk in finance, knowing how we value, what value, understanding bond price dynamics, understanding the broad outline, what drives the price of a bond. Looking at those examples when I showed you, well, I'm going to do this. Look at what happens to the price when I do that kind of thing. You got anything in your notes or anything else you want to ask me about? Because there were a lot. Yeah.
Is it one question from each chapter?
No. No. That's not how the lectures worked. In my lectures, you'll see me introduce a topic. Chapters before, I formally introduce it. I will show you things that you will then see again and again. And the whole point of that is what I've described as a layering approach. And I will test you on the easier layers of it now. But then later, the book and I might go through it in a much deeper way. But I'd rather have you get used to the shallow water before I drop you into the ocean. Yeah.
Well, the question, what is the relationship between risk and return at the end of the test?
Oh, that you're good. You're good. I almost answered that. I'm not going to tell you what's going to be on there. But I almost answered you. Now stop that. But clearly, risk is important in finance. And in some way, I'm going to find a mechanism for you to show me that you understand that importance in finance. And even if that question were not on this, oh, by the way, don't throw away your list if it's just because you've got taken the test, because some of these that I don't ask here could show up on the final, okay? Or they could even show up on exam two, but I'd be holding you to a higher standard of a deeper answer there. But there's no question that the final is comprehensive. And for the final, I just take my question base, take a couple of questions from each of the exams, copy, paste them, take a couple from the question bases of the two exams, and that and maybe one other question, that's your final. So there is not a wasted effort in this. Yeah. No. But I will tell you something about it. Tell me your salary in your first career job when you graduate. Tell me. No. What is it going to be? You know that, right? You're sure that's going to be your salary? So in other words, it's not actual, it is. Did any of you ever see they're old now. There was a comedic troupe out of Great Britain called Monty Python's Flying Circus. And they had one where the Spanish Inquisition happened. And someone said, was surprised when the Spanish Inquisition people showed up. And one of the inquisitors said, nobody... You know what the rest of that was? You might want to watch that movie, Monty Python. Find their movies. They're very sick and twisted. I like them a lot. Okay. Did it help you at all? Think about it. Think about it. Think about it. Okay? We don't know the future. We just don't. We can project, but that's not reality. There is no way that we can say, this for certainty will happen. The best we can do is not project actual cash flows. And I've used this word over and over again. When I talk about the future, I don't say the cash flows are out here. I say the something cash flows are. Moving on, other questions? Yes. No, no, none of the securities laws for this one. For one thing, I'll go through them again in a little more depth. Now that I've laid the groundwork of what securities are, I'll go through those again. So I brought up the Securities Act of 1933 and the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. I will not ask that on this exam. There are a couple of other topics that I went into fairly heavily that I will not ask on this exam. You might want to ask me about those because you didn't hear me mention them. You might want to ask, are those going to be on the exam? Yeah. Say, what was the other one?
Maturity premium and
Hit him. I'll cross the head. Inverted yield curves? No, I will not ask about inverted yield curves. I will not ask about yield curves on this exam. I have plenty of time to go back through that. You had one.
Yeah, you're going to ask about the cause of inflation?
No. Yes. No. Guns and butter. No. Yeah.
When did we talk about flight to quality?
I believe, don't quote me on this, but I think I brought the term up in the third lecture, and then I brought it up again with bonds. Do you remember about it? Do you remember it? Okay, let me help you with that, okay? No, you don't need to write down. I'm going to explain it to you. Many years ago, a lot of the cereals that you eat now that are very common to you were actually introduced in my childhood in the 60s and in the 50s. Okay, so there was one called Post Crispy Critters. It was introduced with a cartoon figure of a lion, Lionel the Lion. And it was the first cereal that had actually been produced by a process that made shapes, unusual shapes. These were shapes of animals. And so in the cartoon commercial, Lionel, every time he said Post Crispy Critters, this whole herd of animated animals ran across him saying, the one and only cereal that comes in shapes of animals. Okay? Now, that should help you. You want some more help? Okay. Madam? You are with your friends, and you are just chilling at your house, okay? Enjoying the equity you have in your home. And you've got pizzas and brewskis, and you're watching an episode of Game of Thrones, and, you know, you're rooting for the dragon to bake some people and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, you hear clawing at the door. And you look out. No, you are there, and you look out, and you say, oh, my God, it's zombies. So you just say, hang on. Just no problem. I'm going to stay in my home because I have equity in my home. And then you realize, oh, my God, one of those zombies is a friend of mine I gave a key to the house to. Open the door. You going to stay on the couch in your home that you have equity in? Or are you going to leave? You are going to leave that home that has your equity in it, and you are going to go someplace else where the zombies aren't. You'll leave your pizza. You'll leave your TV. You'll leave your beer. You will leave your home that you own. Because the zombies don't care. And you never watched the movie Zombieland, did you? So you have no idea what they mean by double tap, by cardio, and all of those things that you fight zombies with. So you have to leave. Do you understand flight to quality? Yes. Yes, a note card 4x6. Yeah. No. No agency. No fiduciary. None of that. No. Not on this exam. Yes. Not directly. I won't ask you for a definition of annuities and perpetuities directly. It helps for you to understand them clearly to answer questions like, for example, about the value of something. How do we value what interest rates? And that's critical. If you look at the annuities and perpetuities, you see interest rates in the formulas. And that tells you a lot about why interest rates are important in asset valuation, in the prices of securities, in the prices of assets in general. So it's worth it for you to understand them and understand what interest rates do in those formulas to create value or to drive the changes in value. What else? Yeah. Okay, now remember when I showed, let me start it this way. Remember I was showing you these stock screens up here, and I was aiming at beta. And I said, that's a measure of risk. Now, do you remember, let me ask it this way. Suppose that I see a stock with a beta of, let's say, 0.63. Can you tell me whether that's a safe or a risky stock? A beta 0.63. Someone help him out.
Safe.
That's a safe stock. If I see a beta of, let's say, about 1.4, that would be what?
Risky.
Okay, now, remember where the pivot point is? There's a pivot of beta that is the measure of the entire world's portfolio. That's that pivot value sort of tells me relative. Beta is a relative measure. It's relative to that world portfolio. And that's not the term I use in class. I use another term, the something portfolio. But it's like the fulcrum against which, when you're on the low side of it, you're in a safer position than the market exposure. When you're on the other side of it, you're in a riskier position than the market exposure. So that's sort of like, that should help you with that question. What else? Go. Yeah, I did. I want you to know what happens to the price of a bond as the term approaches zero. And also I want you to know what happens to the price of a bond separately as the spread between coupon and yield increases. They both affect a bond's price. Okay, they both affect a bond's price. And one of them is, I mean, I'll give you this. The one for term, what happens to the price as the term approaches zero? That's a lock principle. There is something that happens to a bond, no doubt about it, as the time to maturity approaches zero, the term. Remember, term is how long you have to maturity. Maturity is a fixed date and time. So in other words, when a bond is issued with a maturity date of 2037, the maturity date will be 2037 any year before the bond matures. The term contracts as you, like in 2030, even though the maturity date is the same, the term is now 7 years. In 2035, the term is 2 years. There is no question about what's going to happen to a bond price as the term approaches zero. That was rock solid. Now the other one, the spread between the coupon and the yield. The yield, remember, is what the market thinks the bond should pay as a coupon. The coupon is what the corporation is paying. Let me try this one on you. If you had the coupon and the yield were exactly the same, the bond is paying, the coupon interest is exactly what the market thinks it should be. What would be the price of the bond in a case like that? If the market and the corporation agree completely on what the interest rate should be, the bond should have a very special price, a very specific price. What is it?
$1,000.
Yes, $1,000. What do we call $1,000? Do you remember? Par. Okay. So in other words, when the yield and the coupon are identical, the bond will be at par. It's when the yield and the coupon begin to go apart. The coupon will stay the same through the life of the bond. But the market might say, well, now interest rates have gone up, you should be paying more. Or now interest rates have gone down, you should be paying less. But the coupon will stay the same. So the market will react to the deviation either way by doing something to the price. Don't say the price will go up or the price will go down, because I didn't tell you. See, if the bond's paying 5%, now the market says 5% is great, the bond will sell at par. But then later the market said, you should be paying 6%. Then, in other words, the market's saying the bond isn't good enough. And so the market's going to punish the bond. The bond will sell at a, what's the word? Discount to par. Now, on the other hand, if interest rates go to 4%, market's going to say, hey, you're paying 5%? Well, let's go in and buy more of these. That will drive the price up, and the bond will sell at a... Now, I didn't tell you which way the yield spread will be, yield coupon spread would go. I just asked you what happens if the yield spread increases. So you knew where the sweet spot is, where the fulcrum is. All you have to do is tell me very simply what happens to that price if that yield spread begins to open up, increase. I didn't tell you which way. I just told you it would open up. So you can tell me at least the general thing that will happen to the bond price from that. And again, don't say the bond will go up in price or the bond will go down in price, because if you answer one of those, you've missed half of the answer. So you'd lose all the points because you don't understand. All I'm asking, know this, this is part of a larger point that will come in the second half. Much of what we do in finance, in business in general, has to do with spread. No matter what we are trying in our lives, we are trying to find a way to take advantage of a spread of some kind. When we buy stocks and bonds, we're trying to find spreads between what it's selling at and what it actually is worth. When you sell yourself, you're trying to find a way, going to college, you're trying to create a spread between you and someone from Decatur. Okay. You're trying to find a spread between you, every time you join an organization, trying to find a spread between you and your major and everyone else who has the same major. In my business, I am constantly, as an artist, trying to find a spread between the cost of my work and what I can get people to buy my work at. If I can't find a spread, I'm out of business. And any business works on a spread. So that's why I'm focusing on this concept of spread. It pervades our lives. And it pervades finance. We're always looking for the spread somewhere. Other questions? There are a couple of topics I brought up that you haven't asked during the lectures. And you notice that I didn't ask about them. Go. No, because once you get out there in the business world, there will be no ethics. I didn't say that. That was a joke, okay? Yes, they'll all be ethical, just like everyone who's made millions and millions of dollars.
Not.
There was another. Remember the special topics? There was another special topic. Yeah. What is it? Yes, I will not ask about the Fed. Not on this lecture, not on this exam. Good. And that means, by the way, when I ask what are the types of money, that don't answer M1, M2, and M3. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the one that has to do with intrinsic values, okay, if I ask that one. Anything else? Okay, that's all I have for you tonight. I thank you.